Night after the party. What is it? Six people. That's cool. I'm here. So we'll get started. So this is the SharePoint Interactive Theatre. Ask the SharePoint experts anything you want around any part of SharePoint. So it's the close up, open up, wrap up. So I'm William Cornwell. I'm a SharePoint technology specialist with Microsoft Australia. I look after all of the customers around Australia and all the Pacific Islands, part-time husband, part-time father. This is Chris O'Connor. He's from OBS. I'll get the mic over to him.
Thanks, Will. Yeah, Chris O'Connor from OBS in Melbourne. I'm a SharePoint consultant, former SharePoint MVP, developer background. So I'm out on the trenches doing forms, Nintex workflow, all the rest of that stuff. So, yeah.
And my name is Dan Holm. I'm the SharePoint evangelist for AvePoint. I'm also a five-year SharePoint MVP. And so my job is to work with our customers around the globe and ensure that they're successful with SharePoint.
Great. So it's your session. So ask the questions you want to have answered, and we'll see if we can answer them.
Is the mic running? Well, we're recording the question, so I'm going to bring the mic to you.
This one working too? Yep.
Yeah, I was wondering, with SharePoint 2010, how easy is it to customize, you know, a package for enterprise without doing much coding? I know that the framework is more mature, so can you customize it using browser or SharePoint Designer without having to use much Visual Studio? Just wondering.
So when you say customize the package, are you meaning sort of the branding and the colors and the fonts and the logos?
Yeah, setting up email, or setting up fast search. Setting up all the basic features, enabling them, and using them out of the box without using complex features. Can you do that?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's the beauty of SharePoint is that there's so much that you can do out of the box. And as a developer, I find that I don't really use Visual Studio much anymore. And in fact, I sort of have the mindset of, can I do it out of customization? Oh, crap, now I'm going to have to do some code. So I explore all other options before doing some code. And that can be, yeah, as you say, customizing fast search. There's so many other aspects of SharePoint as well, all the managed metadata and all the rest of that. You can do your CSS in SharePoint Designer. So I guess it's code-ish, but it's not Visual Studio, which was sort of your question. So there's a lot you can do in customization and configuration without needing code. So does that answer your question? Sorry.
Yeah, obviously, there's also best practices around how you get those changes and apply them in a repeatable fashion to your production environment. And that would be done through repeatable WSP builds through SharePoint and Visual Studio and those sort of things. But there's a lot you can do, even in a best practices way, with the SharePoint Designer tools that as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Using Visual Studio for deployment and packaging up the elements that you take from farm to farm, develop from dev to test to prod, as opposed to what I was more meaning was C# code. So if you don't want to have to deploy code, then you start to get into the scenario of, you know, trusted code. And if you're doing in an Office 365 scenario, your sandbox code and all the rest of that. But certainly, yes, some CSS, some XML into a WSP, which is it's like a zip file. You take that over to your farm, run a PowerShell command and install it, and then activate a feature.
Excellent. Next question.
So for the managed metadata and the documents, so we have a requirement where all the documents in the farm should have metadata attached with it. What would be our recommendation? To go with staple a feature to have on the default documents, or have extra content types and deactivate the default content document content type? What to do?
Yeah, I suppose the way I'd approach that, I mean, you can set up a content type in the content type hub, which is sort of cross-site collection, and then you publish them out to each of the site collections themselves. And then within a document library, yeah, you can set up a... the way I tend to do it is that I'll create a document library, add my content type, the custom one, from the site collection or from the content type hub, and then drop off the default document one, and then can save that document library as a template. And so then for users who want to be able to create, like, corporate documents or something like that, they can go add new document library, and they'll create a... My company.
My thing is, if they go back to creating a new site using one of the default templates, then they will get the default libraries again.
Okay, now you're sort of talking more about site templates. So you can have site templates that you can. Well, I've done code for that. Sorry, to go against what I was saying before, but I'll have an event receiver on a site created feature, And as the site is activated, as the feature is activated on the new site, then I can provision the content types as I need to. You can do that declaratively, which is XML. You don't need code. But, yeah, site templates, list templates, templating, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, the other thing I would also think about is taking the document content type, which is the out-of-the-box default one, and extending from that with your own company content type, which would be your base one that you would start with. So you're not really overriding or changing the out-of-the-box document type, but you can basically leverage your own organization's document type and start from there. Yeah,
and I'd like to second that as well. So your default document content type, create your company root document content type under which everything goes. Same thing with the item content type. And for those of you who are looking at doing a migration right now from 2007 to 2010, that's a wonderful time to do that, especially if you're using a third-party migration tool that can do content type mapping. You basically just take all of your Wild West document content types from 2007 and at least staple, you know, migrate them into the company document content type that you've created in 2010. It's a really nice time to do that. And then from those, you know, parent content types, obviously, you can go bananas from there. And one other note is, even for, you know, talking about things you don't have to do with code, as an IT pro, I actually have site and document library kinds of provisioning code that I just do with PowerShell. So when a user wants something, they can, you know, either they can call the help desk and do it, or they can actually go and make a request in a list, and a scheduled task deploys it for them. So there are ways to do it outside of, you know, even having to crack open Visual Studio again.
The other thing I was just going to add to that, certainly the opportune time to get your content types right, I guess, between the upgrading from 2007 to 2010 is also look at your metadata and consider what elements that you want to use as managed metadata.
Yes.
Because that is brilliant in SharePoint 2010. That's one of my favorite features, certainly.
Cool. There was a question back here first. Let me...
So with the integration of RBS, sort of external blob storage into your environment, what's some key points and considerations around backups and, yeah, how to ensure you have
backups? Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to hand to Will on that. I'm not an infra dude.
I can talk about that too if you want.
Yeah, so backups with RBS is a bit of an issue. I don't know what you want to say about that, but there's a lot of things that you need to consider around backing up, because you're now not just got content in a database, you've now got content that's now out on the file share. So you need to really actually think about that holistically across all of the information, and then apply the appropriate backup technology that's going to back up all that as a single snapshot, so that you can restore.
Yeah, so there are a couple of scenarios, and it really depends on what your recovery scenario needs to be. But basically, if you're using, let's say, the file stream provider that comes with SharePoint, that comes with SQL, then your standard SharePoint backup tools and anything that uses the SharePoint APIs will actually grab those blobs automatically and basically reunite them with the metadata as part of the backup. Now, as soon as you go to third-party solutions, your basic goal needs to be that there's a synchronization between the SQL backup time with the metadata and the blob store. Now, there's a lot of drama being made about how complicated that is. It's really not. You take a backup of your SQL database, and then either at the same time or shortly thereafter, but after, you take a backup of your blob store. Because what happens is, with the blob store that's interesting, is the scenario you want to avoid is missing an inserted document. So that's why you take your SQL database first, and then you take your blob store, because that means that when you do a recovery, there's not going to be something in the SQL database pointing to a blob that doesn't exist. That's the scenario you need to worry about. The deletion you don't have to worry about, because what happens with RBS is when you delete a document, it doesn't actually get deleted from the blob store. There's a job, a maintainer, that's either done with Microsoft tools or with third-party tools that will go and say, oh, you know, there's a blob in the blob store that doesn't have a record in the content database, and then it deletes it. So it's okay to pull back a blob store that has things that aren't in SQL. That's okay. What's bad is if you pull back a SQL database that points to a blob that doesn't exist. So it really isn't that hard from a conceptual perspective. It's just a matter of really architecting it first, and most importantly, making sure that you've tested all your recovery scenarios and SLAs, both platform recovery, granular recovery, disaster recovery, whatever those are. That's the tricky part, is just aligning it with your requirements.
Oh, hi. I saw Dan's governance seminar the other day, and I'm interested in the
like separating the web apps, which is a great idea, how separating the app pools relates to that. I've read that having too many app pools is not a great idea. So
creating too many is not a great idea, but creating not enough is also not a good idea.
Right. So
there's some governance documents on side inside MSDN and TechNet that talk about the sort of approaches around app pool creation for different models, whether you're having extranet, intranets, internets and those sort of things, as to where you align those app pools. I would always recommend, you know, creating multiple app pools for different services and, you know, the ones that are actually going to be used heavily so that you can kick them over and restart them without impacting everything in the environment. Often, if you only have the single app pool that covers the entire farm, if somebody goes and does something and it has to recycle the app pool, everything goes down, right, for that period of time. So that's not a good thing. We can do a lot better than that.
So the technical guidance is the stated guidance is no more than 10 application pools per server. Now, and then the guidance goes on to say that the starting point is that everything goes into a shared application pool, meaning all services in one, all web app pools in one, unless there's a significant business driver towards isolation. That then heads towards what he was talking about, which is what are the scenarios that you do want to isolate processes? In my book, number one is something that's exposed publicly versus internally. So extranet separate from intranet. Second thing would be situations where you believe that for whatever reason an application pool may need recycling. So if you've got something that's doing heavy duty workflows and you're finding that they're requiring you to restart things, you don't want to use IIS reset. You don't want to have to reset a whole bunch of stuff. You might want to isolate that. So when you put all those things together, and you also look at the default application pools that SharePoint sets up. Oh, and by the way, 10 is really based on the resources of your IIS server. That's a sort of a max, but it's really heavily memory dependent. So on smaller servers, your number is actually quite smaller. When you really put it all together, you don't have a lot of room to play with. An extranet public-facing website on the web app side, there might be a few services you isolate with until you look at your whole farm. Because keep in mind that as you scale out servers, that suddenly gives you more application pools as well. So you might say, okay, servers A and B are going to run these five services. Servers C and D are going to run these other five services. You could at that point actually put each one in its own app pool because you're still only at five app pools per server. So, you know, you want to look at the number of app pools, but you also want to look at how you're distributing your servers, your services, and your web applications. And then you can actually find out that in a decent-sized farm, you're going to be able to play with a lot of app pools across the whole farm.
I think the other thing to consider is security and permissions and what user context and user account
exactly
a service runs as. Often you might want, what's an example, Fast Search, for instance, to run in its own web app because of a particular user account that it will run its user context as.
Yes.
Similarly, if you're setting up your own custom ASMX web services, you might want them to run in their own separate user account so that they don't have permissions to do something bad sort of thing. As Dan was sort of saying, I think you need to look at it more as almost from a service application layer. What things do you want to run? What service apps do you want to have running for a start? And then have I got the resources to farm them out so that I might have my term store on one server in its own app pool? And then might be search is on another server in its own app pool. So then you're really sort of smaller pieces rather than 20 web apps on one server. So I like to look at it from a service app down and certainly looking at it from a security perspective.
And by the way, when you do create an additional app pool, use a separate account. It makes auditing easier. I mean, obviously, there's sometimes a requirement for isolation. And now with the managed service accounts feature of SharePoint 2010, managing those accounts is a non-issue, or it should be for you. So you might as well have an account for every application pool. And then also keep in mind that if you're using managed accounts, you need to have separate sets of accounts for dev, test, QA, prod, because if each of those farms is changing their own sets of passwords, they will eventually break each other. So you're going to be dealing with a lot of accounts, but now we've got easily managed accounts.
And don't set the password the same for all of those accounts.
Yeah.
I've gone into so many customers and they go, well, here's all our accounts and there's 15 accounts. They've all got the same password. It's kind of pointless. Yeah.
Turn on automatic password changes.
And it's mostly pass at word one, right?
Yeah.
That's our standard password.
Thanks, guys. I'm interested in SharePoint and social. 2010 did some good things with the social side of SharePoint, but also missed the boat on a whole bunch of others. Where do you think social SharePoint is going?
where do I think and where can I tell? So what I can talk about is that SharePoint 2010 implements more of a framework for social. It has things like storing connections between colleagues, right, and the groups that you belong to and those sort of pools of areas that you're going to discuss. We introduced a couple of concepts around document management social technology, around tagging and rating and those sort of things. But microblogging and all those sort of capabilities, we still, at this stage in 2010, look to a third-party solutions like NewsGator and those sort of technologies to bring that into the solution. We are looking down the track with the Wave 15 stuff. There won't be anything like microblogging and those sort of things brought into the 2010 framework. But with the next version of the product, that is something that's getting some heavy thought at Microsoft, as is a lot of some of the other capabilities. So it's a watch this space area. Internally, we have a technology which you can have a look at online. It's called Office Talk. If you just Bing it, you'll find some information about Office Talk. That's our microblogging framework that we've built. It's not on SharePoint. It was really an independent, what could we do if we had no constraints over any technology, what could we do around this space from our lab's perspective. So we built up this this microblogging framework and Twitter equivalent sort of technology. That then gets fed to the product team, and the product team can take and have a look at that technology and actually see what they want to pull into the product. So to get some ideas of maybe where we might be heading with the product, I can't be any more definitive than that, go and have a look at Office Talk.
And take a look at this thing called Facebook that Microsoft invested really heavily in. They're learning a lot from that.
I was about to say that I was back in Seattle back in March with the MVP Summit, and a lot of the product team were asking about the social. They were wanting to hear stories from out in the troops, out in the trenches. And this sort of conversation about Facebook for the enterprise, is that what people want? Yes, no. Admittedly, with the younger worker force now, I mean, they've grown up with this sort of stuff. So they're going to be coming into a workforce expecting to be able to share their photos, share their, you know, thoughts and status and all that sort of stuff. Then you've got CEOs and stuff saying, I don't want people saying crap within our organisation, it's going to block up with stuff. So you've got this sort of disconnect. So I think we're sort of encouraging, there's a lot of people asking about social, and I think that it should be, let's allow this stuff, because any conversation is good conversation. It's, it gets people involved, gets people talking, you know, owning stuff. As well. So yeah, SharePoint 2010 at the moment has got a lot of the tagging stuff. But yeah, it's got a long way to go, and Microsoft are hearing that, certainly from us as MVPs and yeah, from all you guys.
One thing I'd probably finish off with that is not all social technology makes sense behind a corporate firewall. So there's a lot of technologies like seeing the quality of content and seeing who rates it and what my friends and my colleagues are thinking about particular content. But, you know, there's a lot of things that just don't make sense behind in a corporate boundary. So, you know, it's never going to be Facebook for the enterprise. It's going to be social computing for an enterprise. You know, it's going to be different.
And in my history, I've you know, there are certain times when you can see that Microsoft understands our pain. And one of them is that Link and SharePoint, while really nicely integrated, there's still some rough spots. And those are the kinds of rough spots that Microsoft is certainly aware of. And, you know, I certainly am hopeful that they'll be, I'm confident they will be addressed in the future.
I've actually got a question that sort of expands on what Tyson said. How do you actually see the UI helping with that? I'll give you an example, is that when you walk around, people just don't have their browser open as such. They've got Outlook open. So we've incorporated our document management into Outlook as opposed to being in the web client. You see them pushing up OCS, and of course it's got the windows open with the conversation. So once again, that's it's not having the browser open, it's having, you know, another window there. So I don't think it's about how you integrate the social media. It's how, you know, what do you do to get an interface so that all that information is available on the screen at the, you know, at the one time and not distracting. You're not sitting there waiting for a message to come in. It's like, oh, there it is, now I'll work on it.
So as you've seen the versions get along, you've seen tighter and tighter integration between our server technologies and our client technology, which is Outlook. So things like sharing a calendar into your Outlook and being able to utilise that calendar inside Outlook, taking your task lists and synchronising those through, taking document libraries and being able to bring those and forums into lists inside our Outlook environment. They're just the start of some integration. You've also seen with 2010, bringing Link into the integration so you can see the jelly beans light up all throughout, bringing some social elements into the social pane of Outlook 2010 was a big step. We're going through a massive recut of what Office means and what Outlook means with Wave 15. Nothing I can talk to you openly in a public forum at this stage, but... No.
Come on.
It's being recorded. there's a lot of stuff that we're doing in the framework around making the tools that you use from an end user perspective the tool that you're going to be using. So regardless of whether you're on a Slate device, an iPad, an iPhone, a Windows phone, a desktop, a PC, a kiosk or a storefront panel, being able to access the information from the tool set that you are in using, whether it's OWA or whether that's Outlook or whether that's SharePoint browser or whether that's an offline client like Workspace, we're trying to make sure that whole technology is seamlessly connected right across the whole board.
And I'm betting there'll be some Windows Phone stuff as well coming. That just, well, there's, yeah.
And on that note, one of the trends I'm seeing that I really like about where Microsoft is going is, you look at the new Windows Phone interface, you look at what they've already shown us about Windows 7, or Windows 8, Microsoft is clearly starting to figure out how to surface information, and that's really cool. The whole live tile model, I don't know if you've had a lot of experience with it, but it's awesome. And Microsoft is really starting to figure out how to put the right information in the right place in front of the right people, and I'm sure there'll be some really cool examples of that in the next iteration.
Two things I'd probably say: Live Tile, Metro UI. Stay tuned.
Yeah, that's safe to say. We've all seen the videos.
Guys, I actually work in a BI area at the moment, and I've been watching with interest, like the Microsoft BI stack. We're sort of in another stack at the moment. I'm interested in what portion of your work. You're actually working on with customers who are actually using dashboards and using SharePoint to show dashboards and reporting, and what sort of uptake there has been in the corporate world?
Yeah, look, probably take that offline a little bit, but if you want to come and talk to me about it, about specific cases, we've got Insights 24 booth over there in the showcase. I'm there after this, so come over and have a chat to me about that. But generally, there's a lot of interest around the business intelligence about delivering that information to a much wider audience that would traditionally not be exposed to the information. SharePoint's great for visualizing the data and surfacing it in just a browser without needing to have all the other tools or the understanding of where that data is, especially with the semantic layer. So there's some specific customers that we could talk about, government customers that are doing it to manage budget and those sort of things federally. And also there's quite a few commercial customers that I work with that are utilising the technology, bringing dashboards together. I've got a great example that I can show you over in the booth as well.
I think the BI story for Microsoft, certainly there's so many pieces to it in so many ways you can slice and dice it. I mean, you've got Excel, there's the Crescent stuff coming with the new wave of SQL Server and Denali, but even just SharePoint 2010 out of the box, if you have a look at indicators, it's a really good way where you can just simply add an indicator list and you point it at another list and say you want a green, yellow or red light based on a value in a metadata column. You can do it. They're there, you just go create it. Instead of creating a document library or a custom list, you create an indicators list. You get little level BI, no performance point needed, no SQL Server reporting services needed. You can just do some quick and easy stuff and wow management. I mean, they love that sort of stuff. And then certainly, yeah, if you want to move up to the reporting services side of things, there's a bit more involved with integrating that with SharePoint and having them show. But start small and wow people. It's easy to do.
Yeah, and I'll actually add to that as well. From where I come from with the customers, I see a very polar set of experience with BI, one of which is real heavy investment in the entire platform and Power Pivot and reporting services and all that stuff. And the other is what he was just saying, which is this really wonderful lightweight stuff that is often really big win and is easy to implement and usually focused at executive kinds of stuff. Where I find a lot of organizations failing is when they're kind of in that middle space where they think they want to do a medium amount of BI. And what I find often in those situations is either there's not the real commitment financially and resource-wise to get to that spot, or they start going there and then they start have realizing that they've got a cultural resistance to making certain types of data really visible. So I find the ones who really know that that's what they want, and there's that commitment and that investment, they go all the way, that's great. The others are doing the lightweight stuff.
Yeah, so one of the examples that I could tell you about is how we did it internally. So we have this thing called the Consolidated Business Intelligence Portal, CBI, WACWAC CBI is what we go to. Basically, at Microsoft, we wanted to try and get everybody consuming all of their business intelligence reports from this single portal. So what do you do as an organization where you've got all this data from all different sources and you want to try and cleanse it and bring it together and data mart it and build this big data warehouse, and 10 years later you're probably going to have something that you can actually start to utilize? Right, so we approached it from the completely opposite direction. What we did was we created a portal framework inside SharePoint. It was 2003 at the time. And 2007 we upgraded it. But basically create that portal where anybody can go and create their own report, hook it to the shoddiest data that they want, as long as it's actually a report that other people might get value of it, put it in there, and then they can run the report and generate it and deliver it from this portal. Okay, so encourage user adoption to this portal. Behind the scenes, the IT group have been going through and cleansing data and getting the data warehouse built over the past 5 years. So we've now got this cleansed data source with real truthful data, accurate information, and what we're doing is connecting those reports that are being executed and run that people are getting value from to the right data sources now, and actually cleansing and correcting that data that's being represented. So we didn't stop the business from actually getting data. We didn't stop the people from actually making the decisions. We actually enabled them to do that. We actually drove an adoption, and now we're actually getting most of the organization actually grabbing their reports from that particular place, and now it's got correct data as well. So it's a good way of actually getting the adoption.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, the whole it's all about data. I mean, if you're not capturing the data, you can't do any BI on it. And a lot of organisation CEOs a couple of years ago, BI is the new thing that everyone wants to invest in. Gartner saying BI, and they go, oh, what's this BI stuff? We better do it. All right, I want to see dashboards. I want to see reports. Okay, what do you want to see reports about? I don't know. You tell me. Well, what data are you capturing? So it's got to start with the data. You've got to capture the data. Otherwise, you can't report on it. And that's the key thing. And so add more columns to your content types. Add lots. Capture everything. Because you can roll it up, you can put it in a cube, you can consolidate it, you can slice it and dice it. But the more granular you are, the more finely grained of a picture you're going to get, more accurate.
Yeah, they don't know what they want until they see it.
Yeah. Brian, do you want to come up?
I think we're done.
Are we almost out of time anyway?
Yep.
Okay.
So it's after 11:30, so thanks everybody for coming along and asking some pretty interesting questions.
Have a great remaining TechEd.
And come to my session at 1:45.
Which session are you doing?
I'm doing high-octane internet websites with SharePoint.
Woohoo!
And pushing it up and through to Windows Azure.
Right on.
Can I ask a question at the